Okay, we'll start at the top of Tzayin Mud Aleph. The Gemara left off, it's going to continue from the Gemara that we left off with before, which is what happens when they ganav, after he sold the property, meaning that he sold property that he did not own, he goes and then he repurchases that property from the Balim. So he actually establishes real ownership over the property now. So he said, Rav answered out, called Shchut, that the Rishon Machar L'Sheni, right? Anything called Shchut, he sells to the other party, which means that when he bought the property, then it flows through automatically to the buyer from him, because that's the schut. When he gets real ownership over it, he's passing that real ownership on the one he sold it to even before he had owned it. The Gemara asked why. Why is that true? So they gave two reasons. One reason was that Shaloni Krai Gazlana, he should not be called a thief. And number two is, right, we said to Leku Behem Nute, to stand by his word. My nafkamina. So Gemara went 2-3, and then the third nafkamina, the last nafkamina, is Iki Benayu the Abba Bimatana, that if he gave it as a gift, right? So the one who says Nechalele Kumbem Zinute, right? Matana Nami Nechalele Kumbem Nute. So it's by gift. He wants to ensure that it's kept. When it comes to Gazlano, he says we give it a gift. Why is there anything to talk about when it comes to Gedel? Right? Gedel is not right Shaya by Matana because he didn't pay any money for it. So what? If he gave the gift and the gift taken away afterwards, there was no loss, right, on behalf of the individual who received or the recipient of the gift. Now the Gemara said that the reason that we assume is when he buys the property flows through is because his intention when he buys the property is to ensure, right, that it's placed properly. He's trying to keep his word by the property to ensure that it stays with the party that he sold it to. That's what he wants to do. Now the Gemara now is going to list a number of cases where the Gemara believes for sure that's not the case. There are certain indications that why he's buying it has nothing to do with making sure that it stays with the party that he sold it to. So let's start. Pshita. It says, Zavna Orta, right, Viyavo V'matana. So if he sold it to this individual, and not only did he sold it to the individual, but before he bought it from the Balim, he went ahead and he sold it to someone else. Or if he gifted it to this individual and then sold it to someone else, then when he goes and buys it afterwards, subsequent to that, it's clear that his intent is not to make sure or ensure that the sale stays whole. Why? Because if he really was going to ensure that the sale stays whole, he wouldn't have sold that again. I mean, the fact that he sells it again already indicates that he's a thief and he has no intention of carrying out his word to ensure that it stays with that individual. Nafalei b'Yerusha. And the Gemara says, if it falls to him through Yerusha, meaning that he inherits the land, Yerusha Mamelahi. We don't assume that he made any effort to acquire this property, and therefore, right, he didn't invest to bring it back. Velat ihu katara chabashra, right, so therefore, since he was not, right, exercising his rights to go and buy it, and therefore that indicates his wanting to rectify the situation and place it in the hands of Lokeach. Over here we say Yerusha is no indication of that, and just because he's erased the property doesn't mean it flows through. Gabe ihu b'chovo. The next case is that he takes it, right, for his chov, meaning that he's a creditor. And as a creditor to it, he stole the property, and now he's a creditor to the nigzal. So the nigzal owes him money. So instead of taking money, he takes this field that he stole as the payment. So now, what is it? Chazina. We look. Right? So if the debtor, meaning the nigzal, has other property, v'amar hai be'ina, right, if we say that I want this particular property, then we say, then the fact that he chose this property from among all the property of the nigzal of the debtor is an indication that he's trying to keep the sale, to make him whole, and therefore it will belong to Lokeach. On the other hand, Elo, if not, Zuzehu, the Bayit Ruyeh, right, you have any of that that's the only piece of property he has, then he's taking it not because he wants to ensure that the property stays in the hands of the person he sold it to, but rather, why is he doing it? He's owed money, and he wants to get paid. And this is the only thing that's available to get him his money. So he's taking it as in lieu of payment, in lieu of money, not to rectify the situation that he created. All right, so far we had three cases where the Gemara knew, which said it was Pshita. Right, the first case of Pshita is that if he does multiple sales, or after, again, he sold to this individual, he does other things, and then goes and purchases the property, it's clear that he has no intent to ensure that it gets the lokeach, because otherwise he wouldn't have done and sold it multiple times. Number two is, if he does nothing to get the property, it comes to him through Yerusha, we don't assume that he did anything to rectify the situation. The third is, if he's a creditor. If he's a creditor, it makes a difference on why he takes the property. Again, if he has choices, then his choosing this property, right, is indicative of the fact that he really wants to rectify the situation. If it's the only property, then the reason he's taking it is because he wants to get repaid, not because he's trying to rectify the situation. Now, what happens if he gets it as a gift? After he has stolen the property and sold it, the nigzal gives it to him as a gift. Gives him the property as a gift. Right? One of them says that matan is the same thing as Yerusha. Why? Right? He didn't do anything to get this. He didn't purchase the property. He's not making an effort in order to get the property, and therefore it's just like Yerusha. It's like Yerusha, he didn't do anything, that means he's not trying to rectify the situation. V'chadamar matanu kemecher. And one of them says, no, matan is like a mecher. Why? De'ilav torok v'arzei kameh. Had he not made an effort to appease and to please this individual, v'avi yavi le matanu. Right, they wouldn't have given it to him as a gift. I mean, it's hard work to make people want to give you gifts. So if he was so pleasing to this individual, he wanted to give this particular property to him. So why did he make this effort? Why did he make all this effort to have this guy give him the gift? Okay, in order to stand by his word. I mean, that we look at the effort that he made in order to ensure that he got this gift, same as expending money in order to ensure, right, that he purchased the property. So that question of matana will really revolve around the how you view a gift. Do you view gifts simply as, you know, free money, you found money? And since it's found money, it's like a Yerusha, and therefore you made no effort. Or do you look at a gift more like mechar, that there's a cost to a gift? Right? Gifts don't come for free. Gifts are hard work to ensure that you were the recipients of this gift. And you've expended that effort, right? That effort is the equivalent of paying money. And therefore, you are trying to rectify the situation. You are trying to ensure that the property stays with the, right, with the buyer. So where it says now, v'ad eimat, right? Until when do we say that his purchase is looking to rectify the situation? I mean, he's going to be brought to din now. And he's going to, basically, he's going to pass in against him. At what point do we say that the reason he's purchasing the property or paying the money back is because he stole it and Bezin is enforcing it on him? And at what point do we say, or from what point, before what point do we say that he's really purchasing in order to rectify or to ensure that the sale went through? To what point do you consider it that he's doing it of his own volition to ensure that the sale stays? And at what point do we say he's being forced by Bezin in order to do it? He's being pressured by the Bezin. Samarguna, when it says until they bring him to din, we assume that any purchase before that point in time is classified as him wanting to keep his word. After that point, once we say a mother with din, once we bring him to din, we assume that it's based in pressure that is doing it. Not even to the Bezin until he gets the adrachta. The adrachta is the document of seizure. And until Bezin writes out and he receives the document that they're going to seize the property if he doesn't pay the money. Until that point, he's classified as doing it of his own volition. Not only when he gets the adrachta, is the basin document that says they're going to seize his property if he doesn't pay up. Right? After that, he gets 90 days. After 90 days, they seize property from him. And then they do an auction sale of his property in order to pay back the money. That auction sale takes, they announce the auction for 30 days. So right at the point when they start announcing the auction of his property in order to ensure that he gets paid back, that's the point at which there's no return in a sense. That's the point. Until that point, if he buys it, if he purchases the property, we consider it to be him doing it voluntarily. Once they're going to auction his property, once they begin the auction, then there's really no turning back at that point. So that's the Gemara has three different opinions to which the line of which you cross between being under the direct of Bezin versus doing it of your own volition. Three different opinions. One is a mother Bezin reaching Bezin. Number two is when they write stocks in and give you the seizure of your property in order to repay him. The third one is even after that document is written, until they actually actively take your property, till that point in time it's considered voluntary. So the fifth law, Rami Bar Kama, Mikte. Let's see. Hailo Keah, but my funny, the high arrow. Right now, what we haven't discussed here is how did the buyer actually acquire the property? Right, he goes ahead and he gives money. Say, for instance, we did it through a money or just through a shtar. He gave money to purchase this property. The only problem is the seller of the property doesn't have ownership to sell it to him. Now, when he goes to buy the property, what exactly is the kinyan that created this? They say, okay, buy shtara. They say, with this document, this document. And he says, what are you talking about? Hai shtara chas v'balmahu. This shtara is a piece of earthenware. I mean, what? It's worthless. The shtar has no bearing because he sold something he didn't own. So what type of tokif does this shtar indicate in terms of ownership of the lokeach over the property? Nothing, because it's not a real document. It's a false document, in a sense. So Amalei Rava, this is an amazing concept. Tehei b'ma'amino. That because of the trust that he had with him. What is the trust? Ba'awana delo kamalei midin. But the fact that he never said anything to him, because Samech Alei, and he relied on him, the Tarech Umaykilei, Gomar Umaykilei. It's unbelievable. The buyer here, the fact that he bought the property from this individual, and when he bought the property from this individual, he never said anything, he never questioned his ownership, even...
Who's he? The buyer?
The buyer. Never questioned the ownership of the Mocher, and even when there were maybe questions arose about the ownership or the veracity of the contract, he did not, right, he did not say anything. The fact that he trusted this seller to ensure that the property would end up in his hands properly in the end, that he's gomer machneh, the individual himself, the mocher, is machneh to him, so that when he buys it later on, there's actually a flow through from the seller to the buyer. Now, what happens when the seller who stole the property goes and buys it? So Rav says that kol zchut that he sold to the buyer could flow through. So now when he buys the property, he's really trying to ensure that the property ends up with the buyer. The question now that Rami Bar Chama is asking, what kinyan was there between the buyer and the seller that allows this to continue, the flow through to continue? I mean that they never made a real kinyan over anything that is, right, real. Again, if it became known that it was stolen, so there was no real kinyan over the property. If there's no kinyan, then later on when the mocher or the gazlan goes and buys the property, why should it be that it flows through to the buyer? He has no ownership here, he has no rights. So there, the answer of Rava is, and again, an amazing thing.
There's no such kinyan. It's a gemir tadas here.
That the fact is, in American law, there's something called reliance. Right, which is that when you rely on somebody tells you information, and you rely on them and then act based on that reliance, right, that even though from the letter of the law you're not entitled to get anything, there's something called a court of equity, which is that even though they're in the letter of law you're not entitled to anything, but because of, we want to make sure that things go right, right, and that there's equity in the law, we ensure that the transaction goes through. So also over here, the fact that you relied on this individual, and he sold it to you, and you didn't question the sale, even knowing that it was the questions about the property was a stolen property. The fact that you relied on him, he's gomer umachne. There's a kinyan of gemir tzedak that he gives over by the fact that you trusted him to ensure the property would end up with you, and that's what creates the kinyan here. It's an amazing, it's an amazing idea, an amazing concept, or, you know, type of kinyan.
Maybe if there were just the word between them and no transfer of money, then it would
some sort of relationship that's developed. Now again, I don't think it has to be in the sense of formal kinyan, meaning like money or things that are made, but something which shows that he's relying on this individual to appropriate the property for him and ensure that it stays in his hands.
Otherwise, any transaction, any seller and buyer of karka, why don't we say konim karka be kesef shtar hazaka? What is the same? Konim karka by
it's clear here that it has to do with the relationship and the circumstances in which the whole thing is created. Alright, so now, Meiti Brakshesh, Mashi Irash Me'aba Makordapa, what I will inherit from my father is sold to you. Mashi Talev Mitzudati, what my traps capture, Makordapa, right, that we sold to you, Lo Markum, did nothing, why? Because it's Dabar Shalom Ba'alulam, something that does not exist. Doesn't exist. You can't sell something that doesn't exist. Right? You can't make a kinyan. You can't create ownership over something that doesn't exist. Mashi Resh Min Abba Ayom, that which I will inherit from my dad today, and he's on his deathbed, and the assumption he's going to die today. Right? Machor Lecha, I sold to you. Mashi Talei Mitzudati Ayom, what my traps captured today, Machor Lecha, I sold to you. Dvarav Kayamim, then his word stands, and the sale goes through. Now again, we're not going to address the fact that this is also Dovar Shelo Balei Olam, doesn't exist either. So that's what Gemara will ask in a second. Right, now the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Rachama, Ha Gavra, right, Vaha Tiyukta. It says that we have a big guy, meaning that Roshashis, this is a big guy, right, Vaha Tiyukta, and he's got a good question here. His basic question is, what? That you can't sell something into the future. You can't create a Kenyan over something that doesn't exist. So, also over here, how could we say the fact that he's trusting him over here, in the beginning he gave money to him, and he's trusting him to procure the property on his behalf, why could there be any form of Kenyan? That's the equivalent of saying to somebody, here's the money, you give me anything that your father's inheritance later on you're going to give to me. Or, here's the money, give me anything that you track show up over the next week. That's the same thing as saying, here, give you money, go buy this from the McDonald's. Who says he's going to be successful in buying the property or ensuring that you get the property? Who says his father's going to die? And who says, right, the traps are going to have anything in them? These are all cases of the exact same case. So why over there do we say it doesn't work? And by the case here, we're saying, by the case of the Gazlan, it does work. Why should it be? So Amar Rava, Gavra Kechazina, I see that there's a big guy here. Tiyuvta lo Kechazina, I don't see a big question. Why is that? Halcha samchadate. Halcha lo samchadate. That's the big difference. There's a smichut adat, there's a reliance here, or there's a relationship of reliance in this case. Halcha samchadate the azul tarach umaitileh. Over here he's relying on the individual that he's going to make his best efforts to go and ensure that the property is in his hands and is going to be with the loteach. Okay, take a lo nikre gazlana. In order that he won't be called a gazlan. Meaning that he has an incentive beyond, right, simply the transaction here to ensure that something happens because his name or reputation is on the line, so they won't be called a gazlan, so he'll stand by his word. All those things matter. Over here, by the cases of the traps or his father dying, he never ensured that anything would happen. There's no detrimental effect to him if nothing shows up in the traps. I mean, if nothing shows up in the traps, all he told him is whatever was going to show up. He told him, if my father passed away, whatever I inherit. There's nothing to inherit. Right, there's nothing going. That was the risk the person took when they bought it. They didn't assume, right, that he was going to go ensure that anything happened. So the difference is reliance. Right, meaning this reliance on the individual has to do with, again, the circumstance or the context in which it's done. If the context shows that there's definitely going to be reliance and there's an incentive for the party who's selling, right, or the party who's doing it to ensure that it happens, then we believe that everybody, both parties are gomer da'at, that there's actually a kinyan here. In the case where there's a possibility it won't happen, or we don't really rely on that individual, there is no gemira to that, because the person who's buying is always assuming that the other guy is just not going to follow through, or the actual item won't show up. And without reliance, or without real smicha to that, there's no kinyan, because there's no gemira to that in the kinyan.
Obviously, this is where lohikirba, like Tosa said in the previous hour. Rav halacha is b'shelohikirba.
You're right.
Otherwise, when the guy stole it, how do I know?
Right, what do you think?
It sounds like the cases are a little backwards. Like we're talking about reliance backed by motivation, by having a motivation.
Right.
The guy, we're arguing the case that the Goslin has the motivation here that we can be reliant on so that he'll lose the shame of Goslin. But he's a Goslin.
Right.
I mean, as compared to like the normal case of a normal person doing business who's ostensibly has done business like
has a reputation. Has a reputation. Right. Here the cases are different. Here there's no. I mean, that you have, there's no demand placed on you that you have to inherit anything from your father, that your traps have to get anything. There's no reliance, because you have no obligation to provide anything. He's just buying whatever the traps show up,
okay.
Right? So there I don't, but I agree with you in other cases where simple purchases of property, you would assume that people want to stand by their word. Right. All right, now, Shokua Lekamei, the Rabbi Abba Barzabda. Right, so they sent this question, the question about the traps and the Yerusha. It sent this question to Rabbi Abbasad. This doesn't require this name. So Rashi brings two interpretations of what it means that doesn't require this name. One possibility is that it doesn't require any answer because of Bnei Yeshiva, because there's no one who will be able to answer it. Don't send this question to the Beit Medrash because nobody will be able to answer it. That's one possibility. The other one is the Tshuva Tagonim is that, no, there's not even a question. Don't even bring it into the base measure, because it's not even a good obvious answer. That's what it is. Amar Rava, Rava in the end says, Zutzricha lifnim v'lifnad lifnim. Says that it needs, so Rava says, either one possibility is that put into the base measure because there's an answer, we just saw Rava himself was the one who answered it, right? Or the other possibility is that no, there is an issue here, and we need to answer it. I mean, that there is, and there is a difference, and we have to explain the difference. There is a question, and we need to explain it. Haka, again, samkodate, haka lo samkodate. In one case, there is reliance. Again, in the other case, there is no reliance. It was a case like this in Pumpadita, but Otve, right, and they asked the question, Amalu Rav Yosef, Zuen Estrikal Dishnim. Again, this doesn't need either, don't send it to Beit Medrash, we're not going to know how to answer this question, or, right, there's no question here, right, speaking about Amalu Rav Yosef, Estrikal Dishnim, but apply Dishnim. Again, it needs an answer, or we can send it to Beit Medrash to get an answer, or there is a question and there is an answer, which is Akasam Padat, Akasam Padat. Mar says, now Mar comes back to the question that we raised at the time, which is Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. What's the difference between when he sells it forward, like a week forward, and he says it doesn't work, versus if he says today, whatever the trap has today, or whatever the, if my father dies today, whatever I inherit today, that works, that Kenyan goes through. What's the difference? In both cases, he's selling something that doesn't belong to him. He's selling something that doesn't exist and doesn't belong to him, right? Why can he go through? So he says, I'm Rabbi Yochanan Seifa, Mashi Rash Miaba Hayom, Mishom Kvod Aviv. Mash Zalem Mitzuda Zi Hayom, Mishom, right? Today Chayav. This is an amazing concept. Again, these are Kinyanim, these little things that we're finding over here, which is that there are new little Kinyanim, like one we just did with the Kinyan of Reliance. Right. Here comes a new type of Kinyan also, which is, what I'm going to relate and inherit from my father today, because of Kvod Aviv. What does it mean because of Kvod Aviv? So you look in Rashi, Mishum Kvod Aviv. Sheyavayiv Gosit, his father's on his deathbed, V'tzarich Ma'ot L'Kvurato. And he needs to raise funds in order to bury him. Ulam Adachrichin and for his Tachrichim. Muzar L'Kvod Aviv, Shavu L'Shato L'Vizayom. That he is an individual, a child does not want to leave his father at Vizayom, where he has to go now and transact and get the money. I mean, he has to monetize his father's estate in order to provide the money for the Kavurah and for the Tachrichim. Therefore, he sells basically the Yerusha, right? He sells it forward in order that he should have the money right away to provide for his father. So it seems like, this doesn't seem like a real Kenyan. It doesn't seem like you can do anything. Right? Exactly. That there is a Takanat HaChamim here that allows you in these circumstances to have a Kenyan, even though it really shouldn't work. And the same thing by Mitzvah too.
We're defining motivation, what's real motivation and what's not real motivation.
Right.
But the case, right, the father being on the deathbed is making the motivation genuine and something to be predicated on.
Right. But here there's not, I don't know if there's reliance over here. It's a harder case. I guess what you're saying, the buyer is relying on him.
The buyer is relying on him.
But he doesn't have control. It's a much different situation. In a situation where the property is stolen, he can go buy the property. Now again, he may not be able to do it, but at least he can try. But his father on the deathbed, he can't ensure that his father dies that day. Right? There's something that's not within his control.
Right.
So again, good Rashi. Shum Kadei Taya, what is that? Masha Talem is Tzuda Tiyayom. What might you have to get today? Tiknu Chachamim. So you see, it's clear. Right. That the Takanat Chachamim, Shiyu Dvarav Kayamim. That his words will stand or hold. Why? Shema Tzarih Chudim is an oath. Dvar Muad. He needs to feed his family today. Whatever my traps bring up for the next month or the next year, ain't sham mishum kdei chayat. That's not his living. So what the Chachamim made exceptions in these two cases, even though truthfully there is no kinyan, because it's davar shelo bali olam, davar shelo bali olam, you cannot make a kinyan on. This transaction should not work. That's a mikar din. The transaction should not work. The takanat Chachamim is that we allow these transactions to go through because of the necessity of the cases. The need here, what's the need? One is to provide for a mate. Right, that the father should not be left vizayon, that the child should be able to provide for the mate, monetized now in order to provide for his father. And number two is that people should be able to have parnosa. I mean, they have to feed their family. If you don't allow them to sell forward what will come in the trap that day, then they're not going to have any money to feed their family that day. If they have to wait till the trap actually gets up in them and then sell it, it'll be too late in the day. So allow them to sell that forward. Again, the tachanas of chamim out of need and right, necessity, not that this really is a kinyan over here. So again, these things that we're bumping into are new types of kinyanim that don't really rely on traditional, right, or say normative kinyanim, but they are, one here, there's takanat chachamim, the other before, which is a concept of reliance, right, where we have a reliance in samchadate, which allows a kinyan to go through. So amaravuna, amarav, homer lechavero, these are cases that we saw in the Gemara and Ksubas Kedushin. Person says to his friend, sadesh ani lokeach, this field which I'm going to buy in the future, when I buy it, I'm giving you ownership over it now, cannot, it works. He says, the field I will buy in the future, that you are able now to make a kinyan, and it's, you're buying it from me. So again, same similar type of case that we have with the gazlan, you're buying a field, and in the future you're trying to bring it into your possession. Samarava, mistavra milsadurav, it makes sense by the...
Does that mean that it's sold to him as of the date of their agreement, even though he only purchases it 2 weeks later?
I was just asked on the previous summit what the yachshav is. It says, Tema, my tariq mi yachshav. If you're allowed to sell something that's not in the world, if it doesn't exist yet, he can reverse his position. The kinyan is effective today. The machshav makes the kinyan effective as of today. And not that you can't back out of it, because davar shebali olam, which is what Tosfos says, is it doesn't exist. Until it exists, you can walk out of the transaction. You can walk away from the transaction. So until it exists, the kinyan's not chal. But on the other hand, because there's no object on which the kinyan is finished. On the other hand, if for some reason the shtar is lost or something happens in between, the kinyan still stands when you do buy the property in the future, because it's in me'akshav, from now. So the shtar doesn't have to be around at the time that the actual object comes into your possession. That would be the difference. Again,
if there's any like nezek that occurs on the property during that interim time,
it can't be. Neither of them own it. Neither of them own it.
Okay.
It's owned by a seller, which has they have no rights to that property. That's the seller's problem. Again, even the buyer of the property doesn't own it today. He's only going to buy it a week from now. When he buys it a week from now, then that's at that point it automatically goes to the person he sold it to, right? The interim period, neither of them have any ownership over the property. It's still with the seller. They can't make any demands. The only question is, what's their relationship in that interim period? What's their relationship? So Tosfos says the word akshav makes it that the kinyan holds even if the shtar or any of the other things fall apart. If stuff that's there, it falls apart. On the other hand, both of them can walk away because the item is above the olam. It's not there anymore, right? It's not there yet. All right, now, I'm a rabbi. Mistavra milk of the rabbi, I saw this down. The word of rabbi makes sense when he just said, I'm going to get you a field. Aval kishit sadeh zu, when it says this particular field, lo, mi yemer demazvin mezavin le, niale, who says that he can ever purchase it? If I sell you for it a field that I don't own, who says that you're going to have the ability to buy this field? There's a seller, there's a third party who has his own mind, right, and who's going to be able to guarantee that you can actually buy this property from this individual? And on the other hand, if he just says, I'm going to get you a field, then okay, we assume that you can get some sort of field, right, and show up with a field here. Ba'elukim, he says, what are you talking about? I'm a rabbi. Philip says do. Rav says that even when he denotes or demarcates the specific field, mitzvah, Rav, kemanam, Rav Shmate. Who is Rav saying over this whole position over here? Ki Rabbi Meir. And we know Rabbi Meir's position is that Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that you can make a kinyan on something that does not exist. So already, if Rav is already making a statement based on Rabbi Meir, which is Adam Makneh Davar Shel Lo Bali Olam, then of course you could say Sadezu, because Sadezu is no different than Sadezam for Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says you can make a kinyan on either one of them. Right? If you want to establish Rav not in the position of Rabbi Meir, then already you have to, right, then you already can make it maybe Sadeh. You have to come up with these other solutions which try to come around or work around the problem of Davar Shel Lo Bali Olam. Right, says the Tanya. We have a bright story. Omer Lisha, itkachet li lachashet kayer, lachashet itkayrit. Woman says, have kiddushin with me after I convert, or after you convert. Lachashet itkayer, after you are free, or after I am free. Lachashet mutbalik, after your husband passes away. Lachashet chlot lacha yivamech, after your yivama does, your yabam does chalitza with you, will be married. After your sister dies, we'll be married. In all these cases, there's no kiddushin. In all these cases, the person is not allowed to marry the individual today. They're basically making a future kiddushin. She says, listen, you know, I'm married to your sister today. I'm married to your sister today, so I'm not permitted to marry you. Or even if I'm divorced from your sister, I'm not married you as long as your sister's alive. So listen, we'll have kiddushin as soon as your sister dies. Again, something in the future. Or, you're married today, no problem. We'll get married after your husband passes away. You can imagine this type of, kiddushin. So the chachamim, right, the chachamim say, ain't a mikudesh. None of this works, because it's not within your control. Right? It's not within your control. I mean, some of it is, but we should kill the husband, right?
Right? It's a home securities market, home futures market.
Right. So you can't, Right? You're not in control of when the adon is going to free you. You're not in control of when the person is the conversion and whether it's going to go through. All these types of things are not things that you can guarantee that are going to happen or in control. So since that's the case, the condition don't work. It's zavar shelo ba le'olam. It doesn't exist. Who says otherwise? Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir Omer Mikudeshet. There is, all these cases work. There is kiddushin. Isha kisadeh zu damya. A woman is equivalent to the case of sadeh zu. Not that she, it's not a value equation here. But rather, a woman is in the forms of kinyonim that you make over here, right? That a woman is like a sadeh zu, meaning a case where it's zavar shelo ba le'olam. It's an instance where you're saying sadeh zu, where you cannot guarantee that you can buy that property. Same thing here, the woman can't guarantee that she's going to be available, right, for the kiddushin. So also, right, the kiddushin shouldn't go through. Ella, Rabbi Rabbi Meir, Mikudesh, and Rabbi says that the kiddushin still works. Why? Because Rabbi Meir believes, Tavar Shalom, Bali Olam, it's not a problem.
All these cases have an instant to our, that they can't be done, whereas, I don't know, I mean, there's enough community between this and previous cases where... You know,
I think the main issue is that it's out of your control.
It's out of your control.
Right. According to Rabbi Meir, what comes out is incredible. That you could actually create that situation. You could walk off to someone's wife and say, listen, when your husband passes away, we're married. And she accepts it, that's kept kiddushin, there's kiddushin. I mean, that's what Rabbi Meir is basically saying, that you could have such a case. That would work. They have incredible. Rabbi Meir,
Could she accept another one?
What do you mean, another one? Only from two people? I'd say on the third second after he dies, you know, to have the decision, right? So it's amazing that you would have that.
Can she accept? I wonder. No, not saying that if the second one dies, but she's already accepted.
Whoever dies first,
right? But once she accepts, is that
right? No, yeah, right. Once she accepts, then she'd be locked in. Right, as soon as the other guy dies, she should be in house.
Right,
that's right. He couldn't do it as opposed to, she couldn't take from someone else, and then
once she does.
She can make a deal.
Right. Oh wait, there's a deal. Wait. Davar shelo ba le'olam. Tosfos just said that. So for davar shelo ba le'olam, until it comes to fruition, you can back out.
Right. We just
so maybe her acceptance of the second kiddushin is implicit that she's backing out of the first one. Right. So it might work. Might work. Been interesting. Amar Shmuel, Amotzei Shtar Hakam B'Shul Yozir LeBalim. So we had the Shmuel earlier, right on Daf Yud Aleph. Shmuel says that if you find a Shtar Hakam, again, what's a Shtar Hakam? Shtar Hakam is a Shtar where the shibud starts at that moment, the moment the shtar is written, even though the loan doesn't necessarily take place to a later time. Finds a shuk, you do it the balim, you turn it to balim. The problem is, well, maybe he wrote the document in the end, he didn't end up lending it. Hashibud nafshay. He already was mishabud nafshay. The writing of the document itself creates the shibud. Vimishum piron, if you're worried about it being paid off, look cheshin in the piron. We don't worry about being paid off. Why? The meita the part A mikrokamikorile. If he paid it off, they would have ripped the shtar off. The fact that the shtar's existence is already indication or indicative of the fact was that there was no payment. Number two is the shtar. Oh, you tell me maybe he wrote it and then they didn't lend the money out. Well, that's the whole concept of this shtar. The shtar is that you mishabit namshay irrespective of whether you borrowed the money. Now, what's interesting here, Rashi says shtar not. Rashi says tafilu liyoveh hamaot. Even if the guy never in the end borrows the money. Shibud atzmo l'shalim, the shamam, that he was mishabed nafshay to pay them. Now my understanding of shtar hakna until this point in time was that, simply, the shibud aguf, the fact that you obligate yourself, or the shibud, right, that lien, starts like a credit line, it starts from today, I'm responsible from this moment today, when I borrow the money later on. But the underlying assumption is that you're going to borrow the money. The way Rashi is phrasing it, he's obviously forced by the Gemara here, because Gemara says that if he wrote to lend, and he didn't lend, we don't care, because he was shabed nafshay. Shabbat Nashay sounds like he has to pay the money back, irrespective of whether he actually lent the money out, which is amazing now. That the Shibud here is not simply that I'm a Shabbat, and you have a lien on my property from today, even though I can only borrow the money later on, which is true too, but also, not only that, but even if I don't borrow the money, I'm now obligating myself to pay you this money. I'm now obligated to repay you this loan, whether I borrow the money or don't borrow the money, which is incredible. Right, that you can actually, as opposed to like a credit line, where the idea is that there's something on standby, and only if you use it are you going to have to repay it. Here, the repayment is demanded whether you borrow it or don't borrow it, whether you draw down on the credit line or don't draw down on the credit line. Which is, that's the concept of the not according to Rashi, is forced by the Gemara, which says that we can't say that if you wrote it to Lovot, to Lulava, we don't worry about that. Why not? Because you can owe the money anyway. We give them back. Summer up that one. Abba, this is interesting, by the way, if you remember back in the Gemara in doubt, that Rav Nachman was the one who came and explained Shmuel's position. When we say Shmuel's position by the case of Shevach, when you buy from a ganav, what Shalohi care about, when you didn't know about it, you bought from the gazlan, right, then what? Then we said over there that Rav Shmuel says that you get ma'ot, but you don't get sheva. So Rav Nachman was the one who explained Shmuel's reasoning because mechteke ribit. So if you remember over there, why was it Rav Nachman who spoke up? Right, Rav Nachman was a dayan. So listen to this. Rav Nachman says, Abba, min safre dayon et demar Shmuel Abba. My father was one of the sofrim of Shmuel. Rav Nachman says, my father was a sofer in Shmuel's basin. Right, and then Rav Nachman himself later on went on to be a dayan. Bahavinat kibarshito kibarsheva. I was 6 or 7 at the time. V'dachrono, and I remember, Dabo Machvazeh. They used to, they were announcing, V'amre yani shtari aknaita v'mishtachche v'shuka. These shtarach now that are found in the shuk, now Adrino the Marayu returned them to their owners. So he recalls, you know, he was visiting his father at work, and it was a sofer by Shmuel, and he remembers that they were announcing in this, that this, I did sack of Shmuel, that shtarach now goes back to the original owners. Amara Vamram, Avanan Nanitanina. We have a brisa that supports this position. Kol Maaseh Beis Din Arzei Yachzir. Anything that is a Maaseh Beis Din, you have to give back. So what does that prove? Because Amalo Kashin of your own. We don't worry about your own. Why? What's the case of a Maaseh Beis Din? We're assuming a Maaseh Beis Din is a shtar that has a henpeck in it. What's a shtar that has a henpeck? That's a shtar that was guaranteed already by Beis Din. Beis Din established the veracity of the shtar and they signed off on it. They stamped it. This is, you know, done by the Beis Din. So if that's the case, why don't we worry? So if someone finds that type of shtar, we're saying Maaseh Beis Din, you give it back. Why don't we assume that maybe it was fine? Beis Din said it was a valid shtar, but maybe the borrower, the debtor, paid it off. If he paid it off, then what? Then it doesn't matter that it was validated in Beis Din. The validation of Beis Din doesn't say it wasn't paid off. All it says is that it's a good shtar. So what it must be that we don't worry about payoff. If they paid it off, they should have written up the document. Ripped up the document. I'm like, Rav Zera, wait a minute, Rav Zera says, how do you know this? Maaseh Beis Din is a generic term. How do you know it's only talking, it's talking about the star that has Hempek in it? I'll give you other types of star of Beis Din. What are they? Maaseh Din Bishtari Chalta'ato V'Adrachto. What are Chalta'ato and Adrachto? These are starot, right, that Beis Din write on behalf of the litigants. What is that? One, if you look at Rashi, star Chalta'ato. Star Shekadvu Beis Din, the Motzi Shtar of Chavero. So Shtar, the Beis Din writes for someone who procures a, he brings before us a Shtar. V'chaydu l'shalem. V'lo shilem. They said that you have to pay, and he didn't do it. V'yardu l'nechassav. They went down this property. V'sham'u, the Balchot. And they now assess the value of the Balchot's property. Echad mehem, v'nadu lo Shtar, shalpi Beis Din Baolo. And now they give him a Shtar that he owns this property that they assess. Right, the value of that they're going to give it to him. That's a chalta. And a draft is, so that draft is that shalom matzulo achshav nechassim. This is the seizure document. The seizure document is that we can't find possessions now, but this shtar entitles you that whenever he does find or we find out that he has any ownership whatsoever, you have the right to go in and take it. So that's a shtar draft. You can run and find whatever you find, money of his or property of his, it's yours. So these two documents that Beis Din writes, right, the lot of your b'nei pirion in who. They have nothing to do with repayment. The reason you return these documents are because the fact that they exist is already indicative that there's something wrong, because Beis Din already wrote them in order to entitle you to take this information, take this item, or take this what you're owed. And if you actually paid it, or if you actually lived up to that the demand of Beis Din, then you would have ripped up the shtar. The fact that the shtar exists already, right, is indicative that it's still in force. It's still in force. We don't worry about, there's no issue of your own or not paying it off, or yes, paying it off. Some rabba, Bahani Lab Nay Piron, they know. What do you mean? You also have to pay off to get rid of these shtarot too. There is a Piron over here. Shuma Hadar Atrisar Yarkeshato. He says, first of all, the Nardai say that even after you collect, based on this seizure document of Beis Din, that you have a right for the next 12 months to go and repurchase your property, buy your property back. I'm from Nerda, but severely the Shuma Adar the Olam, that you can always buy it back. And if Beis Din gives the right of seizure of your property, that entitles the creditor, for instance, to go and take property from you. Now, when you get money later on, you get actually cash, and you have the ability to pay the loan back, you may go back, according to Nerda, for a year, according to a Meimar, even beyond that, you're allowed to take that money and buy back, right, the land that this person has. Alright, this shtar, drachto, this shtar, so it's only, truthfully it is good, it's an enforced document, because we want you to have ownership over the property, but there is such a possibility of pirun. What's that? If I show up with money later on, I'm entitled to get the property back. And when I did that, if he still has the shkar, what's he going to do? After I buy the property back, he's going to show up the shkar again and take my property back again. So why should we give back the shkar? There's a possibility that the borrower, the debtor, actually paid the money now to get his property back. And if you found the shkar, maybe he did pay it. Right? Maybe there's a chashash to piron over here. So the fact that we allow you to return it means that we don't worry about piron. That's a proof. Even by a drachta and halta, it's a proof that what? That there is a concept of piron and we don't worry about it. So Elam Rava, Hotamainu Kaima, the Amre, Ihu, Hu, the Asidah Nafshe. In the case, by the case of Basin, the Maisa Basin, where he has a seizure document, that when you give the money, you should have demanded right away, I want the shtar back, I'm going to rip it up. So what does he say? What does he say? He says, oh, listen, I lost the shtar. I can't find it now. So now what he's going to say, I need to rip up the shtar. What does he say? Inami, shtar, he should have written you another shtar. What does that mean he should write you another shtar? He should write a shtar makhira to you, that I sold the property to you. Because what's really happening here is now a sale. You're handing him money, and he's handing you the property back. So there's a sale here. Why? The Medina Ara lo baila mahadar. The creditor has no obligation here to give the property back. There is no obligation. I mean, from the letter of the law, there's no obligation on the creditor to give this back. In order that people should do what's right, I mean, again, the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law would say that if the guy shows up with the money, you give him back the property. The Rabbanim say, in that case, you give it back. We demand of you to give it back to do what's right. So the fact is, there's no rights. You have no rights here. So therefore, the return of that property is really a sale. Because the fact that you gave him the property, you didn't have to give him the property. When you do give him the property, he hands you money. What's really happening now is a new sale. So the fact is, you can demand of him to provide a new sale document. So either you take the shtar from Basin, the seizure document, you rip it up. Or if he says, I don't have a seizure document, write the shtar makhira, a new shtar makhira. So that's actually what's happening here, a makhira. So therefore, if you didn't do either of those things, you lost. It's your own problem. You caused your own loss because the fact they didn't take care of this issue, and now they find the shtar and they give it back, that's your own problem. On the other hand, hilkach, mirei shehu dekozavin, right? So in the first place he's selling it here, he violated the shtar, he should have written a sale document. Gabi shtar kov, when it comes to a loan, ma'ika lemeimar, imita lepare, if he already paid him back, he violated the mikrei shtar, you should have ripped up the documents. That's what you're going to say to him? Imor ishtimute kamishtamekle. He's trying to get out of it. The creditor is saying, you know what? I don't have the document today. I'll give it to you tomorrow. Damele the machar yavinalach. I'll give it to you tomorrow. So the hashtalete gabai. I don't have it with me right now. Inami if she did suffer zayule, or the borrower wants to save the money of having Sofer write a new document. So in either of these two cases, what are you going to take as a low bet? The borrower here. He says, listen, I borrowed the money, now I went and paid it back to him. I said, can I have the shtar back to rip it up? The guy says, you know what, I don't have it, I'll bring it to you tomorrow. So what are you going to say to him? Write me a new shtar right now? He doesn't have a right to demand that of the lender. He could have asked him for a receipt, that probably would have been a smart thing. But you can't demand a new shtar from him. And then also he could say, listen, the lover really didn't want, he wanted the shtar to be intact. Why does he want the shtar to be intact? Because he needs to borrow money again. Who's the obligation to pay for the loan document? It's on the lover. So he says, I want to reuse this shtar in order to borrow money again. So now, if I want to use this to borrow money again, I want to keep it intact. So he keeps it. So this, what Rav is suggesting is that there's a difference between Maisa Beis Din. Even though in both cases there's a demand of payment, you can't prove from this brisa that we don't worry about payment, because there's a difference between this case of Maisa Beis Din and the case of a creditor. By the case of Maisa Beis Din, when he doesn't, we don't worry about it being paid back, because it's his fault that he either didn't rip it off or get a new shtar written. By the Baal Kol, by the creditor, there are other mitigating factors which may indicate why it wasn't ripped up. Even though it was paid back, it wasn't ripped up either because the creditor was buying some time or the debtor wanted the document. So because of that, there's no proof that just because we're not kosher for piron by Maisa Beis Din, that means that we're not kosher for piron by a creditor. In the end, Shmuel made a statement. This is not a statement, but this price is not necessarily a proof to Shmuel's statement. But that Shmuel does believe that even by case of a shtar knaf, we say that you give it back, but we're not going to change the piron. Right now, Amar Rabbi Abahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amos Neshtar Chol B'Shuk, Apo Pishikot of Bohempek, Le'yach Zero L'Pashuk. The Bar Rabbi Yochanan say the opposite. What? That if you find a Neshtar Chol in the Shuk, even though it's validated by Beis Din, Lo Yach Zirin in the bottom, we don't give it back to Bayim. Lo Mi Bayi Hechad Lo Kot of Bohempek, course, in a case where there's no validation of Beis Din, the Igla Meimer Katzal Levod V'Lalava, that they wrote it and the guy never lent the money because it was never validated. Ella Filu Katzal Henpek, even though there's a validation, which clearly means the transaction took place, right? Umay Niu Mikuyam, right? That means that it was validated. Lo Yachzir, why? The Kashinan Lepiron, right? That we worry about the fact that it was paid back. Rav Yirmi Lerabot. He quotes the price that we just had before. Any Maisa Beis Din, you give back. So what is that he's suggesting over here? What's a Maisa Beis Din? A shtar that has Henbek in it. You have to give it back. So Rabiri, my son, go call Maisa Beis Din, shove it. Not all actions of Beis Din the same. Elagon, shuk, lef, kafran. And we found out that this guy is, on a recurring basis, denies that he actually borrowed money. Right, so Amarava, umishum doksa kafran, kadazima tulo parakla. Just because he was found to be lying one time means that he'll never pay back the rest of his life. So what do you mean? So you're suggesting over here the reason that we allow for we allow this guy not to say that there was, we're not cautious to Piron over here is what? Because he's hooked up Kafran. And hooked up Kafran, what is that, why does that establish the fact that he'll never pay back again? Why should we say that we don't believe him to have Piron? We don't believe him to have payment here because already he was found in other cases not to pay. So that means for the rest of his life, this guy can't borrow money because we always assume that he's not paying it? No, that's not the case. He says, Ela Rabba Masis, and that's not the way to explain the Bryce. So the way to explain the Bryce is, Masis and Mishkar called the Abba Drachta. Again, the answer is up, that the answer is that what? The Mice based in is a case of Caesar documents. Ukidur Abi Zera. He's the one who made the suggestion in the Bryce before. So now, what happened here? We have this statement by Rabbi Bo and Rabbi Yochanan that when it comes to a validated shtar, you don't have to return it. So the question from the brisa that we had before, the kol ma'aser beis din, is after. This is a ma'aser beis din, and you should have to give it back. So we had one question, right? We ate by Rabbi Yirmiyah there ago. So Rabbi Bo answered his son Rabbi Yirmiyah and says, wait, not all ma'aser beis din are the same. You can have a shtar beis din where you have to return it, and a shtar beis din where you don't return it. Where's the case where you return it? When you swoop stuck up front. When we know that the debt already was classified as a guy who doesn't pay back. So what are you talking about? Just because he didn't pay back in another case, we're automatically assumed that he didn't pay back in this case. That's not a fair assumption. Each case is independent. You have to be mukta kafran in each individual case. It has nothing to do. Right, one has nothing to do with each other. Ella, what does it mean, the maisa beis din in that brisa? The maisa beis din, like what Rabbi Zera said before, it's talking about documents of beis din of seizure documents of beis din. Seizure documents of beis din, that's a different issue. Those we give back. Because, why do we give them back? Because even if they are, if they were paid back and he didn't rip them up, that's his own problem. Because he either should have ripped it up or got another shtar written. If he didn't do that, we're just going to give it back. But when it comes to a shtar with a henpek in it, when it comes to a validated shtar, that we will not give back because we're worried that it was paid off. And that's the exact distinction that Rava drew above, that you have no proof from the bryce stuff. Because the bryce could be read one way. And even though by the bryce we say we are not kosher to the piron, that's because it's his fault. Nevertheless, when it comes to a credit document, we say we are kosher to Piron, because over there, what should he have done? He didn't really have a lot of options, and when he paid it back, he didn't get the chance to rip it up. And because of that, we say we are kosher to Piron, we don't give it back to the creditor.